Hello, Sunday Night's Main Event listeners. Jason Agnew here, and we've got one of our podcasts that we do on a weekly basis for you coming up next. It is a free sample of The Old Fucks. Yeah, that's right. So it's All Elite Weekly, but it's my longtime co-host, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, along with his partner, Joe Aguinaldo. They are The Old Fucks parroting The Young Bucks, and they're giving you a Dynamite review. So remember, each and every week, these guys get together to review Dynamite. To get this podcast every week, just sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. You'll get this show and get daily shows covering the world of pro wrestling. So with that in mind, let's get into it. Dan Lavransky, Joe Aguinaldo, they are The Old Fucks reviewing Dynamite.
Was a mantra that could be adopted by wrestling fans. That's it right there. A classic old soul tune off the top of the show this week. You know, the mouth likes his soul music there. That was 100 proof, they were called. 100 proof aged in soul. That's what they were called. Just kind of a not a big force on the charts or anything like that. But that tune we heard there, Everything Good is Bad and Everything Bad is Good, was a hit for them. And I just feel that's how it is with pro wrestling sometimes. Sometimes it's all good. Sometimes it's bad. Most of the time, someone thinks this is good and someone thinks this is bad and vice versa. So I just thought that would be a good one to play off the top, because I, Dan the Mouth Lavransky, was talking to my old fuck and comrade in arms, Joe Aguinaldo, this morning about the very Dynamite episode that we are going to review right here for you on All Elite Wrestling Weekly. And we talked about how the show opened and closed. And because Joe, you saw it in this kind of really, it was kind of like a microcosm of the whole industry in two things here, you know?
Yeah, like it's that song is so apropos, because like, in my opinion, and I know we'll get into this a bit more, but I thought that the show was bookended by what I believe is the best in pro wrestling, and it ended with maybe what's not the best in pro wrestling. And again, like, this is all my opinion, of course, but like, as we talk about specifically the opening and the main event, I'll bring this back up again.
All right, so let's get into it here, because this was a pretty interesting episode of Dynamite, April 27th. I guess it kind of started like the last few have, but kind of didn't. We did, in fact, hear CM Punk's music first, but he didn't come out to have a match. He came out to do commentary on the opening match on the show, which was, in the tradition, an excellent barn burner to just totally get you caught up right off the bat. I really didn't think this would open the show. Dax Harwood versus his partner, Cash Wheeler, the mighty FTR, vying for a spot in the Owen Hart elimination tournament. So this was qualifying match. And this, you know, this kind of came out of the blue, Joe. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how did you feel when you heard this? Because they really just kind of like dropped it in our laps quickly. And then all of a sudden it's like, what, this? There was no buildup, no nothing.
You know what, again, it was just one of those things when, like, because I think it was last week, They just offhandedly said, oh, and by the way, Cash and Dax are going to wrestle qualify for the Owen. Yes. And we were like, yes. What? Like, you know what I mean? And it wasn't just us, like everybody who saw that, like, as, you know, if you look at the Facebook page, they were like, hey, did somebody announce this? Did somebody announce this? So, yeah, it did kind of come out of nowhere. And I would have liked to have seen a bit more of a build. Actually, when we go through the match, I actually had another idea for this match. But anyways, So yeah, it came out of nowhere, but come on, like, I think anyone, especially if you're a wrestling fan, like, you know, a hardcore fan, so to speak, you were pretty excited for this match.
Yeah, that's it for sure, right? Absolutely. Regardless of how it was sprung on us, mm-hmm. everybody wants to see it, right? Especially two guys like this. They're such an amazing tag team. You have great storytelling that you can do with something like this. I would have liked, you know, they should have just done a thing where, like, it's too bad that this wasn't maybe worked out a little bit more, and you could have had the Owen Hart qualifier matches all worked out and announced them all at once. So you could have that build up and even have tease a little tension with the two guys over the 2 weeks or so until we see their match. So I think something like that would have worked a lot better rather than just plopping it in our laps. But like you say, though, because it is something fans want to see so strongly, maybe it doesn't matter if there's no buildup because we just want to see it anyways.
Well, you know what? Let me jump ahead to, like, what I thought might have been like a more effective way, because this is just a qualifier match, right? So what if, and again, I know hindsight, 2020, all that fun stuff, but what if they had said, okay, Dax is going to fight, you know, Dante Martin to qualify for the Owen, and Cash is going to fight like Lee Moriarty to qualify for the Open. And then that's your first round match, Dax versus Cash. Now you have some time to build it up a little bit, right? Because everybody knows that, oh crap, in the bracket, Dax and Cash are coming up. So, I mean, again, this is me being very nitpicky, but I thought it might have had a bit more gravitas if it had been actually a tournament match versus a qualifying match. That's all.
Okay, well, regardless, we got it. And of course, as a match, of course, I mean, this is not, you know, disappointing. The crowd, can you imagine, this is the opening match on the show. The crowd's just going pumped. They're pumped like wild. They're chanting FTR before the two of them even are in the ring. Like, you know, what can I say? I mean, the two guys, they know each other so well. They know the old school kind of storytelling, the old school moves. Like, man, this was wrist locks, arm drags, headlock takedowns, you know, all that great old school fast stuff, you know, going back to sequences and showing each other off back and forth. You know, there was a great part where they did a whole ton of exchanges where they constantly were outwitting each other back and forth, that they got up and they shook hands.
Yep.
They shook hands with each other in the match because of, you know, what was going on. They were constantly moving. They did a really cool spot where Cash gets poked in the eye accidentally, and he starts to get a little heelish on Dax at that point. He's like, Dax trying to see if he's okay, and he's like pushing him away and stuff like that. So they kind of tease some heat of the moment there.
Okay, stop. Hang on. So sure. to that point, though, okay? So that, I thought, was very well done, because even though both guys are loved by the crowd, it established who was the bad guy in the match, right? To a degree.
I would say to a degree.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying Cash did a full-on heel turn, but in the match, he was the one that was like, hey, what are you doing? And then he was the one that sort of took a couple of the shortcuts from that eye poke, whereas Dax was more like, oh man, I'm sorry. So even though both guys are loved, both guys established, okay, I'm the quote unquote bad guy and I'm the quote unquote good guy just by that one little thing.
As you expect, lots of great stuff in this. Dax did a superplex off the top, but was so intense that he actually couldn't get over there to pin him. The crowd was loving it. There was a "This is awesome" chant. They did a whole series of German suplexes on each other. They, you know, they were telling this story. There was lots of stuff where it was like, they totally know each other. We know each other so well. In fact, and they did the literal, when they both did the flying body press on each other at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. It's like, these guys just know each other so well, right? And of course, as it goes on, it gets more hard hitting. They have to do the heavy forearm shots back and forth at one point. And, you know, near falls. It'd be great to sit down and count how many near falls there was in this match. It was insane. At one point, they both fall out of the ring. Referee starts the count. Cash, when he fell out, messed up his knee. The idea was he had done something to his knee. So after that, Dax starts to go after it. But then he did it. He was kind of like, I don't know. Do I need to go this far? He kind of hesitated, basically. Cash rolls him up really quick, but Dax reverses him at the last second, and he gets the three count. So he wins the match. You know, they totally were all over each other. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. They hugged each other afterwards. You know, it was that totally that kind of thing. There was no kind of like heel babyface thing here. It was just like, wow, we just put each other through hell. You came out on top. Congratulations. And right at the end, they announced this is it. Punk gets his title shot at Double or Nothing on May the 29th against Paige. They announced that right as that match finished. So I guess let's just get any other thoughts you had on the match and what we saw.
Okay, so let's start with Punk on the commentary. Like 2 minutes into the match, he had put everybody over on commentary.
Right.
Very
right.
Impressive. Like he put over how like this Owen thing is an important thing. Both guys know it's important. I don't like them, but I know that they're very good. Like he just put everyone over really well. And like, you know, the other part to your point, you'd mentioned sort of the term old school. What I liked about the match is, and this is, again, just me, the way I consume wrestling, they built it. So, you know, they only did headlock takeovers and head scissors, and they only did arm locks and wrist locks at the beginning. And then even when they started turning it up, like, if you really think about it, and I know this is not, like, I don't mean this with any disrespect, but, let's take, say, a Young Bucks match. There wasn't a lot of high spots, quote-unquote. There was, like, the superplex. There was that thing where I think it was Cash was going for the off the top rope, belly to back. And then, you know, Dax adjusted midair and landed on him.
Yeah,
it was really it. Like they didn't do anything overly crazy yet. Like they were like, the crowd was already into it, like big time. And they just built it nicely. It was a nice crescendo, if I can use a music term, of, you know, starting it slow, you know, turning up the heat a little bit, little bit. And again, like, you know, coming back to what we talked about right at the beginning of the podcast about sort of the good and the bad, I thought like this match to me was everything that's good about pro wrestling.
Yeah,
it was a great match.
Good
story that built a bigger story. You know what I mean? With the Owen, you know, again, like Cash was able to establish I'm the bad guy. And again, air quotes, right. But at least the fans knew who was going to be the heavy. Right. And you know, at the end, it was like just a feel good moment. Like it was just a really, really good wrestling match. And I don't mean just work rate. I mean, wrestling match.
Yeah. I thought it was amazing. Just to your point about, how they only did the few of the super high spots, and also notice placement. Like you mentioned the Bucks might go out there, giant high spots right out of the gate. These were only in the final minutes of the match, most of these bigger spots, right? After they had gone through all the mat stuff, right? So it definitely had a great build to it, that's for sure. So, yeah, big match. Punk finds out he gets his title shot at Double or Nothing, so it's going to be Adam Page against Punk for the title. Punk comes down to the ring, says he's going to do a short promo, but I don't know if he really did. he praised Dax and Cash, you know, gave it up for them, thought the match was great. He goes, I've never been in a locker room with more talent than here, which is actually probably true.
Really? Yeah, like if you just look at it from a pure talent perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Danielson, Moxley, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, Kyle O'Reilly, like, you know, these are all, you know, wrestlers that people consider to be some of the best wrestlers out there right now.
Yeah.
Like, and let's add Britt Baker. Let's add MJF. Let's add Darby Allin. Right. So
He goes, in 7 years, I asked myself a question. Could I still do this? And of course the crowd goes wild, and he goes, well, I can now stand here in front of my fans in Philly. Said, yeah, I still can go. He goes, I'm a fan of Adam Page, and a lot of you people are too. And that's not to disparage anybody I share a ring with here, except for maybe Eddie Kingston. I don't know if he was just tossing that in as a joke or that seed planting for something down the line.
This is not the first time he's done that either.
No. So seed planting then perhaps was something with Eddie Kingston down the line.
Right.
He goes, from Darby to Dustin, everything up to this point has been warming up. He goes, I can't promise you a win, but I can promise you that I always will give you 100%, because without you, there's no me. Without you, I don't come back after 7 years. Without you, I don't make it to Double or Nothing. Double or Nothing is in Las Vegas, and I never have been a gambling man, but Paige, I will always bet on myself. At Double or Nothing, you will know you've been in a fight with CM Punk, and I will continue to fight until the wheels fall off. He's literally screaming at this point. But yeah, there you go. Good promo. It's in place. We know what's happening. So yeah, they'll just have to continue to build the heat for it over the next couple of weeks, 3 weeks, I guess, or so.
Yeah, I think this is, next week is where they're going to start turning up some of the storylines. Because I think, like we had mentioned this last week, we kind of thought that, you know, last week and this week might be kind of a holding pattern until they get into the build for Double or Nothing, you know, now that we're going into May. So I kind of suspect that this is where we're going to start seeing things pick up. Next week is when we're going to start seeing things pick up. Oh, okay. Wait. But before we leave this whole FTR thing, actually, I got a question from one of our patrons, Brother Jake from Chicago. Yeah. He actually brought up, he kind of brought up a pretty cool point. So, okay, FTR is, they're basically babyface now. Okay, fair enough.
All right. Yeah.
And like, they still kind of have a bit of a connection with MJF to a degree. Do they, with the Pinnacle. So do they need to do like sort of one last angle where they say, MJF, we're done. And, you know, finally just break that up. Because the last time, remember the last time they wrestled, MJF was in the ring with them and Sean Spears was in the ring with them. And, you know, they did the whole like Pinnacle thing. And FTR said, hey, you know, we're Wardlow's friends, but, you know, we're your friend, but we're Wardlow's friend, and keep us out of it. And, you know, remember, they weren't very happy with what happened in the last time they interacted. So would it be something where they do one last final, like, hey, we're out of here kind of thing? What do you think about that?
I could see them just not doing anything. I could see them just leaving it alone? As it is. And using that, like, we're just stepping back, and maybe you just go, okay, I guess they have stepped back. They're not interested in it now or something. Again, because they are baby faces, right? Why should they be with MJF if they're baby faces, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I guess you could, but honestly, I don't think you need to. I don't.
Yeah, like, or they just keep it on ice, and maybe it's a future storyline after Double or Nothing or something like that.
You left, you didn't even say goodbye or whatever. But I mean, honestly, I'd have no problem now if it just, they just were completely break from them. Cause you know, I think they, you can, I mean, again, that's something that they used to do a lot when we were younger. They would just cut things off quickly like that. And sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. But I think in this case, I think it's fine. They're out of there. They are no longer in the Pinnacle.
Right. Okay, no, cool. I thought I'd just bring that up, though, because I did think it was an interesting point.
Okay. Not to go to something completely uninteresting next, but it's Lambert and Scorpio Sky. It's a quick title promo here. Thankfully, Lambert only gets a couple lines. He said, Sky isn't getting another TNT title shot by accident. This is not a coincidence. And that was it. He was done. And I'm like, all right, thank you. And he let Sky talk and say, no, it's not a coincidence that I was one half of the first AEW tag champs, that I went on to win the Face of the Revolution ladder match, that I had a 402-day unbeaten streak leading to me becoming TNT champ only to be screwed out of it in my second title defense. He goes, Sammy, I'm not here to complain, and I didn't ask my friend Frankie Kazarian to stand aside to lose. He goes, I'll give you credit. You have given fans some great ladder match moments. But this Philly crowd is here to see me beat your ass and take the TNT title. There can only be one face of TNT, and you're watching it. So you go, I enjoyed it because Lambert kept his mouth shut.
Yeah, it was nice to see Sky just let him talk. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. He can. I think he's good by selling his anger and stuff like that. So.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, so next up was the six-man tag here, basically to show off the latest member of the Blackpool Combat Club in Wheeler Yuta. So we had Brian Danielson, John Moxley, and Wheeler Yuta against Camarado, QT Marshall, and Aaron Solo. Regal did commentary for this one as well. He didn't go down there.
And I still love how he doesn't call Excalibur. Yes. He just says, hello, man in the max.
That is the gimmick now, man. He's not going to change that now. Yeah, too many people like that. Okay, so, yeah, like I said, basically showing off Yuta as the new member of the group. They kind of let Brian and Moxley get in there and do, like, the kind of the first part of the match. And get to show off and get to show some stuff off there. And then they used Yuta, of course, as the little one that gets kind of caught up by the heel team so they can work him over. But Brian got a hot tag at one point, and he worked over Aaron Solo for a little while. And then Yuta got tagged back in, only to get thrown around by a Camarado. And Regal, did you catch that? Regal had that great line when Camarado had him up in the air, Yuta up in the air. And he's like, he needs to be thrown around by big men like this.
Yeah, I was going to make that exact comment. I loved Regal on the commentary saying, he's got to learn.
Yeah, he's got to learn. He's got to be thrown around by big men. I love it. I thought it was so funny. Crowd definitely seemed to be into this match as well, even though it was, basically a jobber match. And Yuta gets Camarado down. He's laying in some heavy shots, and he actually manages to pin him for the win. Man, poor Camarado. I've never seen a big guy get this mistreated. It's like, I don't know what it is with him. They don't want to use him or what it is. Or
I don't know, man, because that guy's impressive.
Everything seems to be there. He's good in the ring. He can move around. I don't know if they're holding him off or for something. But, it's really weird. I don't get it. So anyways, basically to show off that Yuta and the member of the group, it was really just that. Yeah, and have Danielson and Moxley on the show, I guess.
I'm curious to see where they go with this. Like, I got to assume it's eventually going to, given the history with Yuta and the Best Friends, maybe it's like Yuta versus like the Combat Club versus the Best Friends with like Orange Cassidy.
Could be. I would think they should. See, now that's one of those ones where it makes you think about the comedy stuff. It's like, should the Blackpool Combat Club be doing comedy, though, with Orange Cassidy and the Best Friends? Like, their gimmick's pretty intense. I don't know if they should be doing stuff like that.
Yeah, like again, I'm only thinking that because originally I would have thought House of Black, but as we'll see later on, that's a bit of a program already. So... I'm just curious to see where it goes, but I'm digging this whole thing right now.
Yeah, I think honestly they should keep building. Like Regal gets it to like stable size, maybe five guys, the kind of classic faction size, right?
Right.
Moxley and Danielson and Yuta, and get two other young guys in there or two other guys, whatever. But that's what I think. I think it's in holding because I think they're gonna build on it more first.
Right. Okay. No, like, and again, I'm like, if nothing else, I'm intrigued. I'm interested. I want to see where this goes.
I want to see you to get thrown around by more big men. All right. So after that, we go to a segment with Tony. He's with Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Tony Storm. Tony said, you guys are all in the women's tournament, but right here, right now, please, no physicality. Britt, of course, is teasing Tori Storm there and said, don't worry, we're not going to get you. We're not going to beat you up. We just want to talk to you. And Storm said she's not going anywhere and she'll see Jamie in the first round. Storm said she wanted Britt to meet her little friend who is in the tournament. And Britt asked if she was bringing a cake. That seems to be the running joke now in the women's division is cake. But it was Tori brought in Ruby Soho. So all of a sudden, Ruby's in here. Ruby says, I've noticed a pattern with you two anytime someone new comes in. And she threw a crotch chop. And I'm not really sure what she was trying to emphasize there. But she threw a crotch chop. And she goes, I don't know if it's because you're insecure or Britt because you've lost the title, but you guys always have something to say. And she goes, I believe the late Owen Hart once said enough is enough and it's time for a change, which he did when he was doing that one character.
Yeah. Yep.
He goes, I can't think of a better. She goes, I can't think of a better way to make that change than to drop you both right here. And Jamie Hayter wanted to go at it, but Britt actually held her off and said, no, let's go. We're not going to do this. No. And they Britt said, we're going to your favorite place, Ruby Catering. And then and they left. And then Ruby made some crack about to Storm about, oh, see how they were trying to get you to leave, but they're the ones that end up leaving. And Storm just kind of stood there. This was weird. This whole segment was kind of weird. I really thought Storm got burned in this segment because I thought they were going to focus on her and Jamie Hayter's match in the tournament, and then Ruby comes in and just kind of takes over, and you know,
yeah, and that line weird. About that line about, you know, they were trying to get you to leave, but then they left. I was kind of like, it was a weird, awkward-ish promo. And Tony really didn't even talk that much, if you really think about it, right?
No, so, that's what I mean. She seemed like an afterthought in what I thought was supposed to be a promo for her, basically. I really thought it was going to be a promo for the match in the tournament, and then just Ruby just kind of hijacks it. Right away, Storm almost goes, don't worry, I'll meet you in the tournament. By the way, I got a friend who's in the tournament, too. It's like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought it was kind of weird. It's like she got lost in her own segment there, and Ruby came in and just kind of took over.
I assume that this means that we'll see, you know, leading up to Double or Nothing, tag match between those two teams. Although the one thing I will say that I liked about this segment specifically was the placement, because in the last few weeks, let's say, or last little while, they usually bunch all the women's segments into one area, right? So you'll have like a women's interview or a women's vignette, and then a women's match, then another women's vignette, and then they, you know,
back to the
So it was nice to see them split it up and put them in the flow of the show versus bunching everything up in one shot.
Okay, so after that, they went to a break. They come back. Tony's with Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, and Christian. Tony says to Jungle Boy, boy, it was kind of tough for you guys last week. And Jungle Boy said he didn't want to sound like a poor loser, but he knew for a fact that he could have won the match against Kyle O'Reilly, and he should have finished him when he had the chance. And Christian says, you don't sound like a poor loser. You just sound like a loser. He goes, but you're not a loser. He goes, put that title over your shoulder where it belongs. He goes, last week was a teachable moment, and I'm sure it'll never happen again. You guys are still tag team champs, and we can right a wrong. And he goes, he starts to throw out a challenge. He says, you know, I want to throw out a challenge to any top five team. And right at that moment, Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs walk right in. Starks said they were ranked number 3 in the tag teams. And he basically challenged them anytime to a match on Dynamite or Rampage or wherever. And he said, please, I implore you, let's do it, boys. And they basically left. And then Luchasaurus roared. to end the promo. So there you go. So obviously setting up a match with these two, I'm guessing.
Okay, so maybe I'm reading into this a little too much, but I thought Christian Cage, like his lines and his promo were like subtle heelish turns.
Yep.
Stuff.
Yeah,
because like it was like when he said, you don't sound like a sore loser, you sound like a loser. He paused there for a second, but it was a teachable moment. You know what I mean? Yes. So,
yeah.
So
yeah,
I was like, when he said you sound like a loser, in my head, I'm thinking, oh. And then, you know, then he kept going. So I really liked that. And Starks, we've said this a million times, dude is good on the mic. Like his promo when he came out was just fire. That was really well done.
Yeah, no, I look forward to that match. I wonder if that happens before the pay-per-view, or is that the tag title match for the pay-per-view, do you think?
No, I think it happens before, just the way that they were talking about it. It seemed like it wasn't for Double or Nothing, because I would assume that if they wanted to do that match for Double or Nothing, that they would they would have built it up a bit more. And to be honest with you, I honestly think that the tag match for Double or Nothing is going to be FTR versus Jurassic Express, and FTR wins the belts.
All right.
You heard it here first, folks.
You got the scoop right here. Okay.
Or the stupid fantasy booking, whichever way you want.
Yeah, exactly. You got some fantasy booking. Okay, after this, we got into Lance Archer against Wardlow. So, of course, this is MJF hiring different guys to take out Wardlow. Not working, Wardlow having to be cuffed and all that stuff to be led down to ringside. So Archer comes out first, of course. They cut to MJF, who's up in a suite in the arena with Sean Spears. They've got champagne and popcorn. I thought it was really funny that they had a bottle of champagne and they were eating popcorn.
That's classic heel stuff, though, man.
Yeah, exactly. MJF, he told Spears he saw a lot of women in the crowd, and he asked Spears if he knew what Philly women use as birth control, and he said it was their personalities.
Again, just like old school heel stuff.
Yeah, people loved it. They all booed him huge, right? He goes, oh, you're going to boo me? He goes, well, you're going to get even more upset when my man Archer decimates the ward pig and silences all of you. And he said, bring out the pig to no music. So Wardlow's let out by the security. He's cuffed. it's so ridiculous, this whole thing with him being cuffed and that.
Do you not see this as kind of like a weird Goldberg thing? Because remember when Goldberg used to come out, he would have the security around him, but he, you know, obviously not cuffed. And like,
well, it's the opposite of that. Okay, yeah, we'll cuff the guy. It's weird. I mean, I understand. I just always think of the goofy stuff, like when I think it was on the show last week when he was in a suit early on and they cuffed him, and then later on he's cuffed in his gear, and it's like, what, did you uncuff him so he could change into his gear? Did he have his gear on under his suit? I'm like, gosh. You know, what's going on here? So anyways, it is kind of a weird thing for sure. But as they're down there at ringside and they're uncuffing Wardlow and letting him get ready, Archer goes crazy right off the gate, does a dive on top of all of them. So this is basically what you'd expect, right? It's just two big guys in there trying to outpower each other. You know, crowd was definitely into it. There were parts where they're just exchanging shots back and forth and the crowd was cheering on every punch. Archer got a pretty good choke slam on someone like Wardlow for a near fall. He also got the blackout for a near fall, but Wardlow reversed it and tried to get a pin himself, but didn't. They're actually fighting up on the top in the corner on the post, and Wardlow just starts laying in all these headbutts. He knocks Archer off, and then Wardlow does a senton.
Oh, and he almost missed that too. Like,
he did. He didn't really hit him. Yeah, I'd have to say on the centon-o-meter, it was probably only about a 20% centon hit.
Right? Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. So, yeah, it didn't quite work out, but it was crazy to see him do it. And then basically the finish, he beats up Archer a bit more and gives him the four power bombs and pins him. Crowd's going wild. They're chanting for Wardlow after he's won. And then the security cuff him up and they take him to the back again. So it's all the idea of Wardlow just being patient, taking out these guys, putting up with the bullshit so he can finally get his hands on MJF. And when it happens, crowd's going to go ballistic.
You know what this, the whole handcuff thing kind of reminds me of? Like, remember the first Conan movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a gladiator, so right. he would fight, and then after he would fight, they would cuff him back up, right? They would chain him back up. That's what this sort of always reminds me of, because I was such a Conan mark when I was a kid.
Perfect, totally makes sense. So who knows? The guy's right, and the gimmick might have been inspired by the same thing. Who knows, right?
The other thing I will say, because you didn't mention it off the top, but right at the beginning of the match, Wardlow hit a beautiful Hurricane Rana, man. I was like, wow, that was really impressive.
Okay, so after that, we had a break, and we come back. It's the Jericho Appreciation Society. I love how they're riffing on those old WWE phrases there. In his intro when he comes out, the recognized symbol and sports entertainment all that.
Yeah, for the last 7 months.
Yeah, exactly. The last, that's so good. But as good as that is, gotta kill Judas. You gotta do it, man.
You gotta kill Judas. Yeah.
You gotta kill it. You gotta you gotta do something.
But you gotta do it like
it's gotta be like You gotta make the music not only not Jericho, but something really offensive that's going to just make people fucking boo the shit out of them, you know?
Well, like, I mean, but what you got to do if you want to, like have him come out maybe one last time to, like, you know, the Judas theme, you know, like, and then they start singing and then you cut the music.
You pull the plug. Yeah, stop, right.
And then Jericho says, no, not anymore. No more this. Play my new music, and then you come up with some like disco thing or something.
Horrible,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Really horrible. Yeah, totally. Whatever they would think the musical equivalent of sports entertainment was.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So yeah, it'd be pretty brutal. That's it. Is it's? I think they really need to do that, man. I know people love singing it, but they got to do it. They got to do it, and I think the crowd that's there the night he does it will go wild.
They will go ballistic.
Okay, so they're all out there in the ring, the whole group of them. Parker starts up. He said, the greatest promoter in the world, Tony Khan, gave the Jericho Appreciation Society this time because he knows we are the greatest sports entertainers today. And he says, in order to have this, we had to give our word to Tony Khan, just like we give it to you, the AEW Galaxy.
I was wondering when something was like
you
that
know
was going
to
happen.
You know what? It's such a low-hanging fruit cheap shot, but at the same time, it's so funny. It's totally funny. Like, I love
not only that, but he did say that, like, you know, because he knows that, like, Tony Khan knows that sports entertainers are best for business. Like, he brought that line up too,
yes,
right?
Yes. Like, it was, like, that one cracked me up. The AEW Galaxy. It just shows you even more how stupid Universe sounds, right? So he goes, but there will be no physicality in the ring tonight with those other guys. It's been agreed to by both parties, so let's get them out here. The Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz come out. Of course, I noticed it right away. Kingston had a Bruiser Brody t-shirt on, which was very cool to see. They're all excited. There's a bunch of chairs in the ring, and they just take them and throw them out of the ring. The crowd's just chanting for Eddie, just chanting his name, and Jericho says, shut up with the Eddie stuff. Tells them they'll all shut up. And he said, look, like I told you before, you people need to appreciate that the Earth has been around for 4.5 billion years, and you're living in the age of Jericho, which I think that is such a great heel line. It's so good. So he gets in Eddie Kingston's face, and he's like, you deprived people last week from seeing us when you had us kicked out of the building on Rampage. They pay to see us. And he's like, we demand an apology. So Ortiz, he picks up the mic and he goes, hey, I got something even better than an apology. And he acts like he's looking around in his pants and his gear for something. And then he just pulls his hand out of his pocket and gives Jericho the finger. And then Ortiz goes, Santana, you got something for him too, don't you? And he did the exact same thing, gave him the finger. Santana said, your problem was you turned your back on the two guys that know you best, the two guys that were with you from the beginning in the trenches. At this point, Garcia jumps in and he says, you guys think you're so tough. He goes, you with your middle finger and you with your perfectly manicured eyebrows, pointing at Eddie Kingston. And Eddie plays it up big time. He plays with his eyebrows and he's got a grin on his face. Garcia says, we ain't afraid because it's not like you can hit us. And they're, of course, trying to bait them right here when they know they're not allowed to hit them in this segment and that. So they're trying to get them to attack in that. So they're not biting. And Eddie Kingston says, all right, back off, youngin. He goes, I hate this crap. And then he just looks at a chair and goes, I hate this chair. He's so great. He's so funny. He goes, I'm not a fan and I don't care about sports entertainment. He goes, Chris, we are going to get you regardless. He goes, stop the crap and let's fight. He goes, I don't care if it's 5-on-3. And Jericho's like, well, you know, that's your problem, Kingston. It is 5-on-3, and you stupid sons of bitches aren't smart enough to realize it. He goes, we are going to go after you one by one, and the Jericho Appreciation Society is putting a hit on all your asses. So I guess the idea now is we're going to get a lot individual matches between these guys for a little while. Kingston says, do you know what hit means? He goes, look in my eyes. He goes, when you say hit in my world, he goes, that means we end it. And he's doing like the gun finger thing to Jericho's head. He says, you're going to listen to me now. He goes, and then Jericho said, what are you going to do now? Hit me? Get kicked out of another company? That was a good line. And Jericho said, this was his last time. So do what you're told, bitch. And Kingston said, I ain't going to hit you. He goes, look behind my eyes. He goes, I can smell the fear coming off you. When you say hit in our world, you got to be prepared to put someone in the ground. He goes, we've done it before. We will put you guys in the ground. He goes, are you prepared? And he just looked down and went, nah, and he just tossed the microphone. And the Jericho by this time is cowering in one of the chairs in the ring and totally, I think a little too much. I thought Jericho almost kind of overplayed the fear a little bit too much, but definitely showed the fear from Kingston. So after, at that point, after Eddie tosses the mic, they get up and they leave. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm a little conflicted on this. I mean, the promos, like the verbiage was fine, but you know, I think like when Jericho says, you know, I'm going to put a hit on you, in my head, I'm thinking, ooh, wrong word. And they jumped on it. Cause like with, you know, Eddie Kingston, when you say you're going to put a hit out from someone, you know, like from, let's say the gangster lifestyle for lack of better description, that's a big deal. Right. And you know, that's not, you know, that Jericho's like, that's not where he's being portrayed. I guess here's my issue with this whole thing. Okay. And again, maybe this is me just overthinking it, right? But like Eddie had accused Jericho of using Santana and Ortiz to fight his battles and that he was holding Santana and Ortiz down, correct? Okay. What are Santana and Ortiz doing right now? They're backing up Eddie Kingston. And when those three come to the ring, who got all the chance? Not Santana and Ortiz. See what I'm getting at? I'm a little confused as to like, because I thought this whole break from the inner circle for Santana and Ortiz meant that they were actually going to start that climb up the ladder to the tag belts, where I believe they should be. And once again, Santana and Ortiz, my answer, this long ass answer, is that I'm disappointed that Santana and Ortiz are still playing a backup role as opposed to being in the mix. And that's sort of where I'm confused about this. Now, that said, I do dig this whole tension thing between, you know, Eddie, Santana and Ortiz and the Jericho Appreciation Society. I mean, it's a cool story, but just overall, I'm like, Santana and Ortiz once again are kind of getting the raw end of the deal, because once again, they are a backup band.
Right. Right. Fair point. Perhaps it leads after, perhaps after this plays out, that's what it leads to. They finally realize that, hey, we need to be on our own, and they start to make their way up the tag ladder. The thing I just like about this is Jericho saying, we're going to take you out one by one. So that means we're going to get all these neat combinations of matches
with
guys in each group. So I kind of I dig that. I kind of like that. I don't mind them not being in the tag picture at the moment so they can go through this. And I think we'll get some good stuff out of it. But, yeah, it needs to have a proper conclusion at the end of it. And also, you need to get that where Santana and Ortiz realize, okay, just like you say, Eddie Kingston's not helping us any more than Jericho did. We need to go at it our own.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I do overall enjoy this storyline. But I'm just a little confused, because I thought the idea of Santana and Ortiz breaking up from the inner circle was so they could start that climb. But they're once again, just to repeat what I just said, they're once again back in a supporting role, which pisses me off.
I'll put it this way. The anger is so great between them. They have to work this out first before they can go back to they got to work this out, Joe, before they can think about the tag titles. That's the way I would look at it.
And that's fair. That's fair. Again, this could be me just being insanely picky. That's all. So,
all right. So up next, we had a quick little promo with Sammy Guevara and Ty Conti. Sammy says, Sky, I get to kick your ass a third time in my match tonight. My signature match, the ladder match. He goes, congratulations. You've been the most uninteresting guy on the roster since you got here. That line did make me laugh. He goes, tag team champ, don't remember, TNT title already forgotten. He goes, I don't know which is brighter, this beautiful lady, this TNT title, or our future together. So there he goes. It's a quick pre-taped thing. All right, so next up, I'm sure the match you were looking forward to. Well, actually, I'll admit it, I was totally looking forward to this too. Serena Deeb versus Sheeta in a Philly street fight. So Serena Deeb comes out first. She just came roaring out with the kendo stick. And, of course, they're just pounding on each other to get things started. This
you know
was
what?
All
I, sorry, man. I like that. I like the fact that Sheeta didn't, like, play to the crowd. She didn't.
No,
she ran,
no.
She ran right into the ring.
She took
and just
it serious.
Going, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I thought Sheeta was kind of, like, crazed in this. Like, I'm like, there was a lot of the match where I'm like, wow, like, Sheeta is serious here. She wants to take this girl out.
No, it was good. I liked it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There was, I always love it. There's always spots, you know, there was one spot early in the match where Sheeta set up a chair on the outside but didn't use it. So I'm just like, oh, okay, what was she setting that up for later on down the road? Got a comment on Sheeta's look, too, with the flowers painted on her face and down her neck and the outfit she was wearing and stuff like that. Like, trying to do her version, I guess, of what street fight clothing would be like with the cutoff jean shorts. But, yeah, quite the outfit.
Yeah, let's leave it at that.
Hey. Sheeta's trying for some knee strikes, but Deeb's using the chair on her knee and just... This was crazy. Deeb just starts going after her knee big time. She did the one spot where she dropped the knee on the back of the chair, like on the ridge of the top of the chair. And that's what they did when it was in pick and pick. It was basically Deeb working the knee the whole time. It was great. When they actually came out of the pick and pick, Deeb is like sitting in the chair, just like laughing maniacally, watching Sheeta kind of writhe around on the mat because she's in such pain. That was a cool visual. I liked that. Sheeta does, of course, eventually get control. She knocks Deeb out of the ring. And then Deeb goes under the ring, and I don't know if she's been hanging out with Herb Abrams or something and got into his stash. But it looked like she, you know, she pulls out this bag of white powder, and instantly in this day and age, you think of cocaine. But I guess she was pulling the trick old school. I should have caught it right away. Pulling it from Mr. Fuji, she had the bag of salt, I guess, and she threw a whole bunch of it in Sheeta's face and got control again after that. So, and Sheeta, you're doing the whole thing where she's really blinded by the salt. She's got the kendo stick, but she's just madly swinging back and forth. She can't really get anything. She goes outside, gets some water from a fan. Or no, I guess one of the guys working handed her the water, didn't it? I think it was.
It was one of the security guards or one of the extras out there.
Yeah, handed her water. She poured that in her eyes. She got Deeb back in the ring, started beating up on her with the kendo stick. She went for the knee to the face, but Deeb actually caught it with the chair, and then she put her knee in the chair. But Sheeta got to her feet, corked her with the chair. Sheeta did the Falcon Arrow off the top for a near fall, which was crazy. That brought on actually the Holy Sheeta chant.
Hell yeah.
One of my favorite chants in wrestling, Holy Sheeta. Serena Deeb got her detox move on the chair, but Sheeta actually kicked out. And Deeb just kept working that knee. She even did the Dean Malenko Texas Cloverleaf, and Sheeta tapped out. So Serena Deeb gets the big win here, and they showed Thunder Rosa with the belt watching backstage. So I guess that's maybe where we're going first for our first title program here with Serena Deeb and Thunder Rosa.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, even before the match started, they made mention that Sheeta was actually ranked number one in the women's division. And when I heard that, my immediate thought was, okay, I don't think Sheeta's winning this match. And then when they showed Thunder Rosa in the back watching that match, in my head, I'm thinking, yep, sign me up. I'm ready for that match, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good. I think Deeb and Thunder Rosa will probably have an excellent match with each other, I think.
Yeah. And you know what, like that, like, again, it was a good solid, like, is it a 5-star? No, I'm not going to call it that, but it was a good solid match. It was intense. I like that. Like, you know, one of my biggest critiques of Sheeta is that she tends to at times overplay to the crowd, where she'll have an advantage and then she'll start looking at the crowd and just go, ah, like that. It's like, she didn't do that as much.
No, she didn't.
Fine, you know? Yeah. So, 'cause like sometimes that will take me out of a match.
Right. Right.
So yeah, no, I really enjoyed this match. And again, I'll admit I'm biased because I love me some Sheeta. So what are you going to do? Right.
Okay, so after this, we go backstage, and Lexi Nair, the new female reporter, she's interviewing MJF and Sean Spears. She said, MJF, you look remarkably calm after Wardlow beat up Archer. MJF started talking and called her Lindsay, and she corrected him and said it was Lexi, and he pretended to apologize and then, of course, just yelled, get out of my frame, and she took off. Spears took the mic at that point. MJF said the reason he was calm was because he's got a plan, and that's a damn good one. He gets out his phone. We listen on the phone. This does not sound like a good plan to me. He's talking on the phone. He goes, hey, big man, how about making six figures for one match? He puts the phone away, and he said, Wardlow, next week you go up against a man smarter than you, stronger than you, and taller than you. And he ended it with, and you can't teach that. So,
oh, gosh.
Yeah. Does that mean what's his name there? I can't even think of his name at the moment.
Big Cass.
Yeah, Big Cass. Is that, so does that mean Big Cass? I mean, it certainly doesn't mean Enzo, so it's got to be Big Cass.
Well, I mean, he did say it was a bigger guy, right? So,
yeah.
See, like, here's another issue that I have with this whole Wardlow thing is that, like, again, in isolation, the story is fine. But we've already seen this now, like, with Jericho, and we kind of saw it with Punk. You know what I mean? So is it, like, every time someone wants a match with MJF, they got to go through all these cronies? And again, it's, I know that's, like, old classic wrestling trope stuff. But, you know, it's all been within, like, you know, 6 months to a year of each other. So I think that's the other reason why I'm not, let's say, entirely right on board with this Wardlow thing.
That.
You know what I mean? Like again, I like Wardlow. Don't get me wrong. I like MJF. I think I've nothing wrong with the performers. But these storylines just seem to be, you know, back to back to back to back. And they're pretty much the same. Right. Like you could almost call this the labors of Wardlow. You know what I mean?
Right. I totally hear what you're coming from. I would offer that people are more, I think people are more emotionally invested with Wardlow than maybe they were with Jericho or something like this. I'm blown away constantly by the reaction the Wardlow segments get from the crowd. Like, they're just crazy. They're chanting his name. They're going nuts. They are so into this angle, even though, like you say, in terms of the promotion, it is somewhat repetitive. But it seems to have clicked. Like, that's all I can say, honestly, is that, yeah. And you know when it's someone like, well, you knew with Archer or someone like Big Cass, they're not going to beat Wardlow. You know that already, right? So it is exactly pretty amazing how strong the crowd is for it, despite how somewhat predictable it is, right?
No, I agree. Like, and again, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I overall, like, I'm being, again, insanely picky. But like, it's just for whatever reason, you know what it's like? Remember, like when they did Blood the first time, right? We were like, oh, they're doing color.
Yeah.
And then they did color like the next 3 weeks in a row. And it was like, all right, enough of the color. And this is sort of to me, this MJF storyline. It's the same storyline, rinse and repeat. And again, don't get me wrong. MJF's great. Wardlow's great. Like, I love the performers, but just the storylines, like, give me something a little bit different, right?
Okay, next up, my favorite part of every show this on Dynamite, the House of Black promo. So, this one, I think they mentioned that we were going to hear from the House of Black. The ring goes dark. A spotlight appears. I think it was on the ramp. And it's Fuego de Sol laid out on the ground, and there's a spotlight on just him. That's all we see. Black walks into Flame. Black said he picked a fight with the wrong three men. Then the other two from the group came in as well. They picked up Fuego. They're about to pull his mask off when they're interrupted by the latest member of the Spanish Inquisition, Alex Abarantes. He said, didn't you know it was sacrilegious to remove the mask of a luchador? And they kind of just looked at Alex and they tossed Fuego aside. Alex said, we told you if you continue to mess with Fuego, you will get burned. He goes, for people that love deception as much as you do, it's hard to believe you haven't figured out why I dress this way. And he goes, to deceive you. And then Penta's music hits. He comes out. And then Pac is back. So he's out there. He comes out with Penta. Aberrantes tells them again that they aren't very bright, and the cloaked figure in the ring is revealed to be Phoenix. So Phoenix is back too, and Phoenix had a shovel in the ring. He squares off with Buddy Matthews, who gets in the ring. The crowd's going wild. They love it. Ray did the foot stomp on Matthews off the top. Pac and Penta come down to the ring and join them. They do the triple dive on all of the House of Black. You know, I didn't mind this as much because we didn't have to listen to all the mumbo jumbo and the drivel that usually goes with the promos. It was, we actually saw some action. So obviously it looks like House of Black against the Dark Triangle here.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was kind of hoping it would be the Blackpool Combat Club versus the House of Black. But I mean, hey, this works too, because like it does make sense from a storyline. And you know what? I was pretty excited to see Rey Fénix back. Like I didn't know how long he was going to be out, because we all saw that sprain and it looked pretty ugly, right? So so glad to see him back. And man, did he look like, you know, he did the kick and then he did the roundhouse thing, and I was like, damn, the dude hasn't lost anything. So
yeah, he looked good. Yeah,
you know, yeah. And yeah, like again, as much as we might complain about the House of Black promos, the one thing I will not knock is those guys in the ring. And I think like House of Black versus Death Triangle is going to be, like, at least in ring anyways, is going to be fun as hell. I cannot wait to see those matches.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's it. If we can just keep the promos to a minimum on the House of Black side, I'll be perfectly happy, because I agree with you. The in-ring will be great.
Like, given that they're going with this, like, you know, Penta Dark, and Alex Aberrantes is like dressed up as like a demonic Inquisition dude, like I would hope that they keep the promos just minimal, period.
Just keep them short, man. Please, you know, and don't try to get too allegorical or
meta. Don't get too meta.
Just come straight out, like, Death Triangle, yeah, you will be dead from the House of Black. You know,
Otherwise, I might have to redo like another House of Black promo with like Dr. Seuss, because like it's just horrible.
I know. Okay, so after this, we had a promo for a match we're going to see on Rampage with Darby Allin against Swerve, and this is an Owen Hart tournament qualifier as well. We see Shivani with both of the guys. Tony said they're friends, but only one man can move on. Swerve says, hey, friends is a little strong term for me there with Darby. He goes, I consider us rivals who have beat the hell out of each other for years. He goes, but it's a new day and you've grown up and I'm so proud of you. He goes, but do you really want to turn Rampage into Swerve's house as I beat you? And Darby says, you can't come into companies and claim it's your house, but AEW is Darby's house, and I've been here since the beginning. And he said, Friday on Rampage, I'm going to show you why this tournament is Darby's tournament. And Swerve said, yeah, good luck with that.
That might have been the best Darby Allin promo I've heard in, like, ever. Like, just, like, I just thought it was a good, you know, like, they still kept it short, which is good, but it was just the way he delivered it, I thought, was really well done.
And so I like the points too. It's like, hey man, look, you just got here. You can't claim that you're the face of the company or whatever. You know, come on. He goes, I've been here since day one. It's a perfectly legitimate thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And you know, the match will be good too. That's the other part, right?
Now that's an interesting one in terms of who wins to go into the Owen Hart. What do you think?
I personally think Swerve is going to win that match. I think they've cooled down Darby a little bit. And I think you need to, like, again, they just signed the Swerve. You need to elevate him and get him at least some eyes, right? And, you know, like the Ricky Starks Powerhouse Hobbs thing was okay. It's still sort of ongoing. But, yeah, I think Swerve gets in the tournament.
Okay, so next up we had this huge monster 10-man. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and the Young Bucks against Brock Anderson, the Varsity Blondes, Dante Martin, and Lee Johnson. And Julia Hart is still coming out with the Varsity Blondes sitting there with the eye patch on. What is going on?
Like, that is intriguing. I will give you that.
What? Really?
Hold on. But they got to start doing something with it soon, because now it's just becoming...
This is one of those things we always talk about where it seems like they leave things to linger just a bit too long.
Yeah, well,
you
this
need
one
to
is...
move on this. You yeah, need this... to move on this.
This one is like unlike, say, some of the longer term storytelling that they've done in AEW. Like, this one, you can't leave too long, because at the end of the day, it's like, it's not, say, CM Punk. Like, this, the ascension of CM Punk has been a long term storyline, but it works because it's CM freaking Punk.
Yeah.
You know, this one, we're talking about Julia Hart, and no disrespect intended, but really, who knows? Like, Julia Hart is not at a CM Punk level. You know, she's not at a Britt Baker level. Like, so they got to do something for her soon, or she's just going to become the punchline of a joke.
Okay, yeah, it's so weird. I don't understand. And why no connection to House of Black? We never see her with House of Black. There's no acknowledgement of her with House of Black. Like, it's such a weird thing.
Yeah.
So as you much expect, this was the dives all over the place match. Guys are going crazy right off the top. Everybody's just diving on everybody. They go to break, pick and pick. The Bucks and Red Dragon are arguing inside the ring already partway through the match. And they did it all through the match, actually. There were a few spots where they're arguing. I mean, it was okay match. It was just the usual flying around and stuff. I didn't take major notes on it because it was crazy. They did the four-man BTE trigger on Lee, and then Cole gives him the flying knee, and that's how they finished it. And after the match, Adam Cole's got all the t-shirts, and they say Undisputed Elite, so he gives them to the Bucks. Red Dragon put them on, so they all have them on at the end. And the Bucks looked genuinely enthused and ready to go with it. They had the shirts on and everything. So perhaps a strengthening of the alliance here.
I don't know, man. I still think it's going to be the Bucks and Red Dragon at Double or Nothing.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
I think there's something going on there. Because, like, again... That would be a weird sudden change to, like, because, you know, like, even in the match, you just said it, they were arguing a lot during the match.
Yep.
To all of a sudden go, no, we're good. Everyone's good. Like, no. What? Just because you gave me a t-shirt? Like, come on. Right.
Yeah.
So, I still think that there's some story. And I think, like, again, I'm curious to see what next week's Dynamite looks like, because I think next week's Dynamite is probably going to be some heavy storytelling as we start setting up for Double or Nothing.
Now, if you go with that as a match with the Bucks and the Dragon, what do you do with Adam Cole?
It's a good question, because I don't know what he's – I don't know where he's at. But, I maybe even if not Double or Nothing, like, eventually there's going to be a match with the Bucks and Red Dragon. There has to be. Like, that's just – I mean, just the way that they've been booking this – it just seems that that's the logical conclusion, right? I think Double or Nothing makes sense because it's a big pay-per-view. That is, to me, a pay-per-view worthy match. But yeah, it's a good question. What do you do with Adam Cole? Because he's obviously not in the world title chase right now. And again, this is why I'm curious to see what happens next week, because I think this is where you're going to start seeing like those lines drawn in terms of who's going where.
Okay, so they go backstage at this point, and something's going on with the Jericho Appreciation Society. We see Santana and Ortiz laid out. They've got Kingston trapped, and it's kind of like old school Fred Blassie or the Sheik here, and Jericho tossed a fireball in Kingston's face, and Eddie totally sold it big time. I can see Eddie Kingston in the booking meeting going, yeah, I'm going to get a fireball in the face. He probably
Dude,
loved
you know
it.
What? It's so funny that you said Freddie Blassie and the Sheik, because, like, on the board, right, some of the younger crew were
Taker?
Like, well, they were like, they were like, you know, Alexa Bliss and Randy Orton, because that just kind of happened a couple years ago, right?
Yeah.
I was like Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And you, yep. And then you brought up Blassie and the Sheik.
Oh, it was classic. I've got an old wrestling mag from the 70s, and the story in it is about Blassie and the Sheik feuding. And there's a picture of one of them using the fireball on the other. Like, you know,
crazy. I love it. Like again, old wrestling trope. It worked well.
And it looked good enough. It looked good enough that it could be used, you know, okay, yeah. It's fine. You gave him the fireball.
But what I did like though, that setup was when Matt Menard comes out, he's like, hey, cameraman, you want to see something?
Yes.
And they run to the back. That was great.
Yeah, exactly. But that's so good because that justifies why the camera's there.
Yeah.
It justifies why the camera's there, because how many times have we watched stuff when it's like, why was a camera there at that point, right?
Yeah, that dude, I love that dude. He's underrated, man, on the mic.
Yeah, he didn't get to, when they did the group thing earlier, he didn't speak at all. I was very surprised.
It was mainly Parker, and he did a really good job. I thought he did well.
Matt didn't speak at all, and he was mostly just freaking doing the bug eyes and exaggerating the gum chewing and all that. So after that little vignette with the fireball, it's time for Excalibur to run down a whole bunch of stuff really fast. So he went through Rampage. We're going to have Darby versus Swerve. There's going to be some sort of face-off between Hook and Danhausen. There's going to be an interesting tag, Jade Cargill and Red Velvet and Kira Hogan against Willow Nightingale and Trish Adora and Sky Blue.
Wait, stop. Ooh. All right, I just had to get that out there.
I'm sure it's going to be, I don't know if it's got to be kept short. I mean, this show looks pretty packed. They got a lot of matches on here. That match has got to be pretty short. I mean, you know, besides what we've mentioned, they're also going to have Keith Lee against Colton Gunn, and Samoa Joe is going to defend the Ring of Honor TV title against Trent Beretta. And you would hope that at least that match would get a little bit of time. So that's like 1, 2, 3, 4 matches in a 1 hour show, plus Hook and Danhausen doing something. So yeah, I don't know. That seems a lot for one show.
Thing is, like, I mean, I suspect that the women's trios match will probably be short. I kind of suspect that Hook versus Danhausen will be short too. I think it's going to be like he hooks him with the red rum and we're done.
Right.
I think that's just going to be more to build storyline to like the eventual goal for Hook, but that's a lot of stuff for an hour.
They ran a quick little promo with Trent Beretta and Samoa Joe kind of going back and forth about this match. Beretta says, hey man, I spent years in Ring of Honor, I didn't win any titles, I've got nothing to show for it. And he goes, Friday night that changes. Samoa Joe says, they say a man's riches can be measured in his friends. He goes, you are rich in friendship, obviously the best friends. Trent says, Joe likes to hit hard, and I'm the guy that likes to get hit hard. Joe says, I'm not here to break you, but show you that you are facing Samoa Joe for the Ring of Honor TV Championship. After that, they ran down Dynamite very quickly. The ROH Women's Champion, Donna Perazzo, is going to take on the ROH Interim Champ, Mercedes Martinez. Now, I don't know when this happened or what the setup is for this or why they have an interim women's champion, but that's how it was announced. Wardlow versus mystery opponent, which I guess is going to be Big Cass. Bobby Fish versus Jeff Hardy in another Owen Hart tournament qualifier match.
Yeah, again, not a huge card, not a bad card, but I suspect that we are, you know, going to start building those storylines now, right?
Okay, this leads to the main event of the show for the TNT title, Sky getting the rematch with Sammy Guevara, but it's a ladder match. Lambert is with Sky, but really is just around to get kicked in the nuts, as you will see later on in the match, which is probably the best use of him, really. So, kudos to them finally figuring out how to use him best. So, you know, Lambert's with Sky, Sammy and Ty are totally playing up the kissing, you know, going nuts in front of everybody. The annoying couple we all had in high school that were friends. But when the two got together, that was, you know, you know, they're clamped at the face. So they're really building them up kind of heelish with this whole thing here. Match gets underway quick as Sammy's coming down. Sky's already in the ring. He runs out of the ring. They meet on the ramp. They start brawling. Sky's grabbing the ladder right out of the gate, using it on Sammy. I think they did a fuck him up chant. Were they saying fuck him up, Sky, fuck him up or something?
It was something like that. I didn't quite catch it, though.
There was a fuck him up chant, like the old ECW style chant they used to do there. Sammy gave him a German suplex on the ramp, and Sammy was getting booed. Like, Sammy was getting booed by fans.
Big time. Yeah.
He was. Yeah. These fans, they all have such relationship issues, man. That this is the easiest way to get heat on wrestling fans. Sammy did this freaking insane spot. They were using the giant ladders, there was no small ones. They were all the super long, whatever they are, 12 feet ladders. And Sammy did this, tried to insane spinning, I don't know, 450, 780, whatever, off the ladder. He was off the top of the ladder, does this crazy freaking somersault flip down in the sky, and basically misses Sky completely. He didn't hardly hit him at all. But they used that to go to pick and pick, which was probably good to get out of there after that spot because it really didn't work out. And hopefully he didn't get hurt from that.
Yeah, that was my thought. Like, when he did the thing, it was like a spinning senton thing, right?
And yeah, I don't know. It was like, crazy.
He kind of grazed Sky a little bit, or maybe Sky missed him or whatever. Anyways, the point is he landed hard. And yeah. I was like, whoa, yeah. Okay. Like, you know, like, is he okay? Like, you know?
So while the pick and pick's going on, Sky's basically, he does the smart thing and he just kind of leaves Sammy lying there and he starts up the ladder. But Sammy, even though he's down, he's able to push the ladder over. Ty Conti comes out and starts to interfere. She hits Sky at one point. But this is when they get into doing silly stuff. There's already a ladder in the ring and he can go up there and get the belt. So Sky brings another ladder into the ring. It's like, dude, there's a ladder in the ring already. What are you doing? And he just did some weak spot where he dropped Sammy across the supports on the ladder or something. He didn't even do that much with it. I'm just like, oh, man, come on. Sky starts climbing, but Sammy gets back in there. He climbs up the second ladder. He does a dive off that ladder, but Sky actually catches him and gives him a cutter off the ladder to the floor. And they timed it perfectly.
That was actually an impressive looking spot, but I mean, to get there anyways. Yeah. I have some words about this match, but anyways, continue, please.
Yeah. You know, for sure. It was a great looking spot. Sky, at this point, there's also a ladder under the ring with barbed wire wrapped.
Okay, wait, no, hold on. Okay, you got to hold on, stop. You got to stop here for a second. Okay, so here's where I started losing it in the match, okay? So you hit that TKO, or whatever, the cutter off the ladder. Beautiful. Like, that move looked devastating, okay? But what do? Do you go up the ladder to get – no, we don't go up the ladder to get the belt. We go out of the ring to pick up the ladder with the barbed wire.
Exactly. I mean? Yeah.
This is where I started losing it. I'm like, what are you fucking doing?
Yeah. No, it's true. It suffered from that a lot. And then Sky, he pulls it, and he ends up being the one going in the barbed wire when Sammy gives him a Spanish fly eventually on the ladder. Sammy, at this point, grabs Lambert, brings him in. So Ty comes in and just wails him, kicks him huge in the balls. That's all he was there for. This brings, I guess, Paige VanZant was watching backstage, and that was it. She couldn't handle it after he got kicked in the balls. She comes running down. She goes after Ty Conti. And, of course, Sammy and Sky are still going at it. Ty got a page on what? And then...
Well, they, I think, like, Ty eventually.
Oh, yeah, Ty got the kick on. She kicked Van Zandt, right? And then she grabbed Sammy and started necking with him. They were, but did you notice they were getting cheers, right? And it's like they kind of noticed, oh, we're getting cheers, and then they just did that. They did, like, that's what I thought was happening. So I'm like, they're cheering them, and then all of a sudden they did that. They did that, and like, yeah, and then they start booing them again.
Yeah, they got booed big time when that happened. So yeah, because Sky, like, I think yeah, PV, Paige Van Zandt got knocked out at some point, and then that's when they kissed, and it was like, oh, okay, heel heat there. So. Yeah.
Sammy had the barbed wire ladder, but Sky ended up getting his flatliner. Sky starts going up the ladder, but Ty jumps on his back. And then Sammy starts going up the other ladder, and Paige does the same thing and jumps on his back. So we've got each guy climbing up a different ladder with each has a lady on his back. They get to the top, of course, before they can get to the belt. The ladies are taking shots at each other. They basically both fell off the ladder, and then they're still fighting on the ground. Sammy and Sky are battling on the ladder. Sammy gave him the finger, and Sky bit his finger. That's an interesting way to reply to the bird there. Bite it.
I thought that was actually pretty cool.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I'm like, oh, yeah. No one does that, you know. We see a lot of middle fingers. In this show alone, there was a lot of middle fingers.
Lots of middle fingers, yes.
Sammy knocked Sky off the ladder. He almost had the belt, but then Sky comes back. He flips the ladder. Sammy lands right on the barbed wire ladder. Sky goes up again trying to get at it, but Sammy's still not done. He comes back. They battle again at the top of the ladder, but Sky basically knocks him to the ground, grabs the belt to become champion again. Ethan Page comes out to congratulate him. So does Frankie Kazarian, all dressed up nice in a dark black suit. They looked at each other and slapped hands. And basically, I guess we're going to have Sky versus Kazarian as the first title defense. So there you go. Ladder match, new champ, number two for Scorpio. What do you say, Joe?
Okay, so... remember how at the beginning of this podcast, we thought that Cash versus Dax was like everything that is right. What, like, when pro wrestling does it right, that's what it looks like. Cash versus Dax. Okay. But this match to me felt like it was, I'm not going to say everything wrong because I'm biased towards, like, I'm not a gimmick match guy. Everyone who's listening, who's on the Patreon knows that I'm not a gimmick match guy, but like the problem was, okay. So number one, you had this weird heel face dynamic because everyone's booing Sammy and Ty, but we don't like Dan Lambert, who's with Scorpio Sky. You know what I mean? So you've got that going.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Then it's a ladder match. And I know that with a ladder match that you have to suspend a little bit of disbelief. But again, when you knock a dude, when you hit a guy with a cutter off a ladder and you decide not to go up for the belt, but grab a barbed wire ladder, the whole point of this match is you want to win the title. Like, that's what you're here for. Yeah. So go
I
win
totally
the title.
Agree.
Right.
Yeah. I
like,
totally agree.
There was even a point where, and I don't remember the exact spot, but it was the same thing. Sammy had gotten Sky down after something. Like, he got knocked him off the ladder. Does he go up to the top? No, he goes for the barbed wire ladder. And I'm like, guys, you're supposed to go to win the match. Like, climb the ladder, let Sammy or Sky stop you from winning the match. But, like, you're supposed to try to win the match, right? So that took me out. And then you had the whole thing. Like, again, I get it. Like, you've got the interference with Ty and Paige Van Zandt. But, like, you know, when they're climbing up the ladder and then both women are fighting, like doing a hockey fight at the top, and then they get knocked off the ladder and then they do a double kick and knock each other out. I was like, oh, my God. Like, like, there was just a little too much in this match that I couldn't suspend my disbelief. But the one thing that I will admit that I'm a little disappointed about is that AEW, up until yesterday or this Dynamite, were not flip-flopping titles. They flip-flopped this title now, what, three times? Because, like, Cody won it for 2 weeks, Sammy won it, and then, like, Sky won it, and then Sammy won it, now Sky won it again. And this is all within, what, like, 2 months? You know what I mean? So, like, you know, coming back to sort of the original thing that I said, call back to what I said at the top of this podcast, to me, the ending, like, this this main event was everything. Again, my own personal opinion, okay, the way I consume wrestling, this main event was everything that I dislike or think is not good about pro wrestling. And hence, this is why that the song that we have at the top of the show, so apropos, good and bad, because you had really good pro wrestling and you had really bad pro wrestling.
Yeah, it's always hard with gimmick matches, of course, you know, but part of the thing I think that the fan base that AEW has likes is seeing different matches as well. So you know that these matches are in there. But, and I guess, you know, they wanted a lot of the wrestlers themselves get into that mindset of we need to top what's come in the past. And sometimes storyline gets sacrificed for pulling off the ultimate spot. And that's maybe that's what happened a couple times in this match. It's like, no, I have to do this spot. The story be damned.
So, yeah. And look, I appreciate the effort that both these guys went through, not knocking that. I 100% agree with what you're saying. Like, you know, wrestling is different for everybody. Like, some people like this stuff, some people don't. I get it. But there was just a little too much in this match where you were asking me to suspend my disbelief a little too much. And like, it's not just this match. I mean, heck, we've seen matches, you know, TLC matches, you know, in WWE, where it's like, stop setting up spots, go win the match. You know what I mean? Like Money in the Bank. Like this is not an AEW issue. This is not WWE issue. This is just a wrestling thing. Right. So I get what you're trying to do. And you obviously want to have a really good match, but at the same time, like, you know, to me, like, again, the way I consume wrestling, and I suspect you're the same, it's the story. Like if you're kind of doing something that goes against, that counteracts what the story is, it makes it hard for me to really jump in. Right. And again, if you compare what that match was with all the shenanigans, with all the barbed wire ladders, with all the 12-foot ladders, and then you compare that to Cash versus Dax, who only did a superplex and a crossbody reversal thing from the top rope, and that match was amazing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like, so that's, again, great opening match. I'm going to say not so great main event. And again, like, if we just talk overall though about the show, it was a good enough show, but I still think that compared to some of the shows that we've seen, like in the past couple weeks, this felt like very much like a holding pattern show where they're just waiting to start turning on the jets for Double or Nothing.
Well, one other thing that we should mention in terms of how the show felt or was structured, and you and I did talk about this earlier, but apparently because Adam Page, you know, we had the announcement of the CM Punk title match was really just kind of thrown out there. And that's because Adam Page, unfortunately, contacted COVID or someone in his family did. And apparently he's okay and everything's good. And they expect him on the TV next week. But they did have to change some stuff around here for, I think, both this Dynamite and the Rampage that follows because of that. So that was part of what was happening here as well, I think, is they had to rewrite it quickly. So it kind of got thrown together in spots, probably.
Yeah, actually. And you know what? That's a great point. Like, again, I agree. You know, knowing that, I still think it was a good show. And, you know, someone on the Facebook page actually made mention of it. And I can't remember who it was, but someone made mention that they felt that the show was a little too jam-packed.
Right.
And I'm guessing it's because they had to do a sudden rewrite because, you know, Adam Page wasn't available. Maybe he was supposed to be in, like, who knows? Maybe he was supposed to come out and do another face-to-face with Punk or do a promo with Punk, you know, to talk about that upcoming title match. Right.
I think that's it. I think that's what was probably supposed to happen. Announcement of the title match and then both of them out there face-to-face kind of talking about it or whatever. Right.
You know. So again, it was a good enough show, and like, please, anyone listening to this, like, this is just me being ultra picky because overall I really enjoyed the show. I thought it was, you know, it was a fun 2 hours of television, you know, that I still look forward to watching, you know, next week and in subsequent weeks. So, you know, good on AEW, but again, there's just some things where I just couldn't get my head around or I couldn't wrap my sensibilities around.
All right, and I guess we're recording a little bit earlier than usual. There's no ratings news yet, is there?
No, I've been looking through.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything either.
Yeah, throughout the recording, so we'll probably post that on the Facebook page. Actually, might as well plug some stuff while we're here, because we are actually on the free show today.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So, like, you know, for the Patreons who, or the patrons who normally hear us, thank you for supporting us. If you, though, are not a patron and you're hearing us for the first time, you know, and you know, you want to hear more of this and more wrestling content, like, you know, AEW, WWE, NXT, you know, join our Patreon. It's $5 a month. It's patreon.com/SNMEradio. We got you. We got all your wrestling covered. We got trivia. We got Dan's rock and roll music show. And for everything else, we have BAM. You know, and again, yeah, $5 a month gets you in the door. You know,
I'm probably gonna jump on with those guys every once in a while to talk a little F1, because I'm getting back into watching the season again. And I know on BAM they like to cover it a little bit. So, yeah, that'll be cool.
That's gonna be cool.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely check it out. A whole different, it is a real mixed bag. It's not just wrestling stuff for sure. It's lots of cool stuff to check out. Alrighty, so I think we should put it to bed for now then. And thank you so much for doing this a little bit earlier, Joe. And yeah, everybody else out there, enjoy the weekend. Do we know who's doing Rampage in the Rampage pool this week? Because I think Rampage's characteristic is it's going to have different hosts every week.
I believe Boris is doing it with like a mystery guest. That's the last time.
So just like Wardlow versus mystery opponent, we're getting Boris and mystery guest. Oh.
Yeah, and I don't think it's big cast, but it's a mystery guest. So. So yeah, patrons, like, tune in on Saturday when the show drops. And again, if you're listening on the free feed, if you would like to hear that show and a whole bunch more, patreon.com/SNMEradio. Join. What are you waiting for?
So there you have it. That podcast can be delivered to you each and every week right into your inbox, along with all of our other podcasts from Sunday night's main event. We're not just on Sunday nights. We're on each and every day, and you can listen on demand. And along with our wrestling podcast, we also add in a weekly 3-hour trivia show that I host on terrestrial radio across Canada. And we also add in Dan the Mouth Lavransky. Well, he loves two things in life. One is wrestling and the other is music. So we have Dr. Mouth's Rock and Roll Lunch Party for you each and every week as well. Because you know what, guys? There's more to life than wrestling. For all of these podcasts, sign up at patreon.com/SNMEradio. Only $1 a week. Hey, it's a pretty good deal. Patreon.com/SNMEradio. Don't you dare miss it.